where they laughed at him literally when he demanded to be taken to a magistrate. I'm laughing. I don't mean to laugh. I mean to just, it's unbelievable.
Oh, you have to laugh or you will cry or get an ulcer, take your pick.
Yeah, and I explained the situation to him, and there was silence at the other end, and he said, really? And I said, really? He was totally shocked at what's going on. I would like actually to talk about something else for a minute.
Sure.
If I could, because a program aired last night on 48 Hours that was absolutely despicable. 48 Hours purports to report the news. They were making news last night. This was a segment on the San Francisco Cannabis Buyers Club.
Mm-hmm.
Which portrayed the club as a basically a little social group that get together and smoke pot, and portrayed Dennis Perrone as being nothing more than a con man and a drug dealer.
We're talking about the group that provides cannabis, marijuana for those who are suffering from long-term illnesses.
AIDS, cancer, those
glaucoma.
Fighting the wasting syndrome from AIDS, glaucoma, multiple sclerosis. I just got a call from a woman in Hayward, as a matter of fact, who's bedridden and weighs 75 pounds, she's been deprived of her pot. It's the only thing that has helped her at all with her multiple sclerosis. At any rate, it was absolutely despicable. They interviewed former employees of the club who were obviously, they didn't ask them why they were former employees, obviously disgruntled former employees, who said, made several claims that were just outrageous. So I just would like to expose it for what it was, and that is a crock. And we will be sending email to the show whether or not they'll whether or not they'll say anything about it in next week's show.
Has there been any similar attack on the Santa Cruz Cannabis Club?
No, there hasn't been a similar attack. But as far as I'm concerned, an attack on one of our clubs is an attack on all of our clubs. And there are six of them now. There are clubs in San Diego, Santa Ana, L.A., San Francisco, Santa Cruz, did I name them all?
No, that's five.
Yeah. Oh, I think there's one up in Sacramento, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And I just got a call from someone yesterday who wants to open a Sonoma club. So they are definitely happening, and it's exciting. Oh, and the other thing they failed to even mention was the fact that twice our Congress has passed a bill for the legalization of medical marijuana.
You're talking about the legislature statewide.
The legislature statewide has passed this bill, both houses, mm-hmm. Republicans and Democrats, and our lovely governor has chosen to veto the bill twice.
Right.
And that is why we are in the initiative process right now, and we are...
It's not going too well, I hear.
Well, I think that the latest word is that we're only about 10,000 signatures short.
And when are the signatures due?
Well, I think by the end of this month.
It isn't by April 15th?
Well, I think that's the deadline, but I think the real deadline is the 30th.
Well, let me ask you this. Let me ask for your comment on this. I mentioned to you, I think I already mentioned to you, but you were on the air here, a month and a half ago talking about the case. Is it Kelly Williams? That's her name?
Yes.
In which I've described this case a number of times about a woman who's the death chamber of her husband was invaded by Officer Seeley, the son of Sergeant Seeley, who... shouted, "Where's the cocaine?" Threw
right.
back the blanket covering the corpse, revealing his catheter and diaper.
Yes.
Shouted to the woman, "Stay right there!" And
yeah.
Started taking photographs, and then yes. flipped down his business card as he left.
Right.
You know, I told you that I mentioned this case at City Council. It came up for a claim. I guess you filed a claim on her behalf.
Right, and they decided that they were going to agendize it for the next meeting.
Instead of summarily rejecting the claim, as I've seen done in almost every case that's ever come before the City Council, they usually follow, like little robots, the assessment of their risk manager and or their city attorney,
mm-hmm.
the on motion of Celia Scott after I read this claim, and that's really all I did. I read the claim, and I also commented that you did not bother to file a Citizens Police Review Board complaint since I speculated it would go nowhere, and also that you're talking about some serious action, mm-hmm. that the city would now have to defend this disreputable activity mm-hmm. in court, mm-hmm. and that at the cost of whatever the taxpayers would have to pay.
Right.
And Celia Scott immediately moved to have the matter considered in private session. Catherine Byers seconded it,
yeah.
and the entire council voted for it.
Yes.
So you can send me a check.
Well, I thank you very much. I had no idea that happened, and I'm thrilled. All I heard was Barisoni say that... mentioned the case and say that it was going to be discussed in closed session at the next meeting.
He did mention that at 7 o'clock. That was after I brought it up at 3:30.
Aha.
So okay. that was.
I missed that part. I was watching the.
I think it shows that we can have some impact on the process at City Council if we can present things sufficiently strenuously and clearly and forcefully, and we have an entree into the City Council through Celia Scott. That is our only entree that I can see at the moment.
Yeah.
And that's
well, the bigger issue here, and I'll say it, you know, to anyone who listened to me, is that we are paying, in essence, the city has a contract with Atchison, Anderson, Hurley, and Barisoni.
A legal firm.
To pay them for defending these lawsuits. They have absolutely no impetus to settle these cases. The longer they drag these cases out, the more money they make. I have had at least two other cases that should have been settled. The client that I had was willing to settle for a reasonable amount and an apology. And we in fact were negotiating with the risk manager, who is an attorney himself, Jack Haim. I will give him a good plug because he is one reasonable person. He was recommending that they settle for this, and the next thing I found out, they withdrew the offer and said, so sue us. And that means, of course, guess who is going to be involved? I mean, we're going to pay the city manager. This is after their own risk manager recommended that they settle this case. It's now going into litigation. I just served the city. In fact, they're being served as we speak here, and as well as the Santa Cruz PD in that case. And you know, all this time and effort is going to be spent by all these people, and all this money, all of our money, all of Santa Cruz taxpayers' money, is going to defend this lawsuit that their own risk manager recommended that they settle for the reasonable amount they were willing to settle for. It's outrageous. It's outrageous, and something's got to change in terms of how they evaluate these cases and this blanket rejection of cases and claims, where in fact many times the person would be willing to settle for a reasonable amount, and yet they've seen this opportunity to make a lot of money defending off the case, and that's.
Let me ask you this, Kate. I'm going to kind of turn to another subject quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, I think that's very pertinent. I have found that their law firm, although I like Barisoni personally as an individual,
mm-hmm.
his behavior around almost every case I've ever seen regarding homeless issues has been deplorable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they rejected all claims. They pursued wanton Dave Jacobs to the point where he can't come back to Santa Cruz. He's fleeing warrants for essentially basic civil rights issues that he should not be harassed on at all,
right.
Like sitting down off to the side on the sidewalk.
To his credit, too, he was defended himself in I forget how many sitting violations and blocking the sidewalk violations. I can't
recall. He won 15 misdemeanors.
That's it.
He turned them all back. They were all either not filed, discharged, reversed on appeal, or some other thing as well.
And we miss you, Dave.
Yes, Dave. Actually, I interviewed him a week ago. And,
did you?
Oh, yeah, he's doing pretty good.
Oh, good.
We're still hoping to lure him back to Santa Cruz to get arrested at City Council, possibly in one of our large demonstrations. I'm thinking that might be a very good opportunity to start mobilizing around the issue of this misdemeanor sleeping charge. What do you anticipate will be the course of this if, in fact, Nikki and Mooncat's cases actually go to trial?
Well, you know, that's a difficult one. As you know, I mean, juries are unpredictable, and the issues involved are complicated, and I think that our only hope is that we can in fact find a jury who is willing to practice jury nullification.
Mm-hmm. Or one member of a jury.
One member who would be willing to understand that the law as applied in this situation is outrageous.
So this is really an educational process we should be beginning right now.
Well, yeah,
to get the word out to the community.
This is definitely a first if they do continue to prosecute it as a misdemeanor.
Now, can they if they can drop the charge and then refile it once as a misdemeanor? Is
right.
that's the reality of that?
Right.
Are you have in the past been helpful? You, for example, you represented Robert Flory in the mm-hmm. in the kangaroo court of Heather Morse,
yeah.
who's a Watsonville judge, formerly with the mm-hmm. DA Art Danner's office.
Wife of a sheriff.
They all seem to stick together and eat in the same places. I guess you have, you know, over the years as an associate of Ray Grunike, or Grinning Ray Grunike, as I call him, who for two decades really helped homeless people tremendously as he tried to pursue civil rights for them, and then eventually got disbarred because he got swamped and started missing deadlines and
right.
so forth, and actually hurt a few people along the road there.
Mm-hmm.
He's back in town, I understand, and he's expressed a willingness to join you in sort of engaging in support for homeless rights cases. And I guess you got a bunch of sleeping ban cases coming down the pike, and often an attorney is important because so many of these cases are infraction cases where they will not appoint a public defender.
Mm-hmm.
Not that a public defender is of much use in many of these cases anyway, even
yeah.
if it's a misdemeanor. But you've also said that you really are on the edge as far as needing clients and money, and indeed you attended this forum which Jane Hagstrom of Santa Barbara was at which Jane pointed out that the sleeping ban in Santa Barbara was busted for 3 years from 1986 to 89 through a combination of legal battles, mass
media.
Demonstrations, media focus, a charismatic
right.
national figure, Mitch Snyder,
mm-hmm.
social service provider pressure.
But mostly what they had was a very, very wealthy woman who was very sympathetic to the cause. And
Kit Tremaine,
yes, who financed the operation basically, and also financed. I thought that part of one of the most interesting parts that Jane Hagstrom had to say was that they actually got the university to make a study of the homeless issue.
Robert Rosenthal, that's right.
Right, right. I think it was a graduate study.
Mm-hmm.
Of some sort that they did on the
Well, you know, we have some students around who are like, for example, Celine Marie Pascal,
mm-hmm.
who has written a very interesting thesis on the issue of the decision-making process around homeless issues in the downtown ordinances
mm-hmm.
for the last 6 years, how council members essentially sold out their principles in order to maintain solidarity with the merchants. Scott Kennedy was one instance of this.
I think one interesting thing that I've noticed lately, I mean, it's something we've known all along, how powerful the downtown merchants are, but I think that the recent arcade situation really, really punctuates and puts an exclamation point on their power.
Now, what you're referring to is the video arcade
yes.
that was proposed for the downtown Pacific Avenue,
yes.
which ironically was only supported by the two men whom I regard as some of the worst on the city council, Mike Rodkin and Scott Kennedy.
We all know who was instrumental in defeating it.
Tell me about that.
Stuart
Martin of
That's
the ID
right.
building, a very rabid and a fanatic anti-homeless activist.
Yes,
yeah.
yes, and I mean, I just think this is absolutely outrageous. This is a businessman, Jim Mellahan. I've known him for years. I know he and Trish very well, who has proven his ability to run a good, clean operation. I mean, he did things like to discourage some people from hanging out that he didn't want to hang out. He played classical music
oh, yes,
very loud.
I heard about that.
And this would be some place where the kids could go. And there was no reason to deny this permit.
But what do you make? What do you make of Celia Scott and Catherine Byers voting? I think at least Byers voted to deny the permit. I think maybe Scott did too. Did you listen to the debates around this issue?
No, I followed them in the what they had to say in the paper, but I haven't had time to actually be at the meeting to hear the dialogue.
But let me jump back to this issue of the sleeping ban.
Yes.
And your personal situation as an attorney. There actually have been no attorneys who have really stepped forward. Although I think the ACLU has made some quiet noises off in the corner about dealing with the sign issue or some such thing.
Mm-hmm.
Have you been in touch with Margaret Marr or other attorneys with the ACLU who have given indication they might support the rights of the demonstrators or indeed challenge the sleeping ban?
No, I have a call into Margaret Marr, but I haven't heard anything back.
Keep on her butt, so to speak.
So I can't. But I, you know, I'm at that overextended point that where Grinning Ray was 3 years ago when he was disbarred.
So you're really not in a position to take any of these cases.
Well, I'm going to anyway. I mean, I feel compelled to. I can't. This is my city. You know, I can't let these things happen. But as we speak, you know, my PG&E bill is is due, as is my water bill, and everything else is about to be cut off here, and I just can't continue to keep doing things for free, and so it's, you know, it's a real dilemma. I mean, it's the government picks on, we talked about this before, you know, the government picks on those who can't fight back. They pick on the elderly, they pick on the young, they pick on the homeless.
Well, ironically, the homeless have you might say that one of the biggest powers they have is the power to obstruct and the power to disrupt. And this may, of course, sound like your traditional Robert Norse stereotype kind of comment, but it actually is quite true. More so than people in houses who have something to lose property-wise, homeless people can risk going to jail,
yeah.
Particularly if they do so in mass groups, mm-hmm. where they're engaging in peaceful civil disobedience,
mm-hmm.
and they're trying to bring up issues that the bureaucrats prefer to ignore, like the issue of the right to sleep at night, like issues of discrimination downtown, like issues of police abuse.
Mm-hmm.
I guess another question I want to ask you is regarding Lisa Ann, and you may recall Lisa Ann was the woman whose two children have been removed by CPS, mm-hmm. and recently whose baby, what's the baby's name? Star?
Star, yeah.
It is Star?
You caught me off guard there.
Yeah, baby, yeah. Star has been taken away primarily because they didn't like what they saw as her lifestyle, and also there's some question of baby, you mentioned at one point there's a question of almost baby theft and baby selling going on, maybe.
Yeah.
What's the update
now
on that?
Well, at this point, last contact I had, they are, of course, making these impossible hoops for her to jump through. She told them at one point that her significant other occasionally had a drink, and now they're making her go to AA classes in order to get her child back.
I see.
Perhaps
a scarlet A on her forehead.
Well, the latest thing is, in fact, I just got a call this morning, and they're concerned about her baby is not developing the way they'd like her to be developing, and they want to get special permission from her to allow someone, a specialist, to come in. And of course, my response to that was, you know why the baby's not developing properly. The baby's not developing properly because she's separated from her mother, and she's 6 months old, you know, and has been. So I just had a client show up, so I'm gonna have to end this lovely conversation.
Well, listen, thank you for the update, Kate, and try to keep abreast of these issues, and we'll call you maybe on Monday to get a further update.
I'm dancing as fast as I can.
Dance faster.
Okay.
Talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
And that was Kate Wells, or Catnip Kate as I call her, attorney at law, still struggling and successfully paying her bar fees, apparently, and against all odds, behind on her mortgage, but hanging in there. You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm Robert Bathrobespierre, Robert, in fact. And this is Bathrobespierre's Broadsides. Looks like the extended version today, which is good because I've got lots of information to pass on to you. I also have the phone number for Free Radio Berkeley, and I'm going to call them right now to see if we actually have an update on the case that's currently so important before Claudia Wilkins, federal district court judge, who for a year and, well, a year and a half, nearly, has held the FCC dogs at bay, or the wolves, I should say, eager to eat up all the little stations on behalf of their corporate masters. But let's see if we can get some updates on what's going on today. Free Radio Berkeley is going to court, fighting an attempt by the FCC to deny them a license and shut them down. This will affect us as well. And we're getting a busy signal, and that call will continue to try to call and see what goes on as the afternoon continues. Let's have a little musical interlude here. I enjoyed the Phil Oak song before. I hope you will enjoy this next one. It's called Flower Lady.
Kisses crumble in a web of loneliness, written by the poison pen. Voices break before they bend. The door is slammed, it's over once again. But nobody's buying flowers from the flower lady. Poets agonize, they cannot find the word. And the stone stares at the sculptor, asks, are you absurd? Is black through the canvas runs a cry. Portrait of the pain never answers back. But nobody's buying flowers from the flower lady. Illusion to come home from the war. Sarcastic students tell them not to fight no more. And they argue through the night. Black is black, white is white. Walk away, both knowing. Tears in the quicksand of their minds. I'm a flower lady.
And that was Phil Oakes, Flower Lady. Beautiful song. Well, let's get back to Tuesday's city council meeting, which they were giving a pleasant burial to the expansion of, actually I should say, for the provision of a legal place for homeless people to sleep at night in the state park, 60 spaces. And we've heard from Ron Howard that there will be no transportation up there. Perhaps Barbara Riverwoman and Sherry Connable will be providing that transportation themselves for the next week or so when the program kind of withers away and dies its natural or unnatural death through lack of funding, although possibly Barbara and Sherry will continue it through private fundraising. I don't know. I haven't talked to them. If they're listening to this, they should feel free to call in to join in this discussion. What's interesting, however, are the other voices that appeared here. Here we hear one of the homeless supporters of their program. Again, I regarded this whole thing as a major tempest in a teapot and distraction from the basic issue of the sleeping ban, which really should have been the basis, the focus of all this, since it affects so many hundreds of people. But let's hear what went on.
I'm a cook, and I'm homeless, and I cannot afford my any adequate housing at this time. When I heard about her program for the homeless, I took every advantage point I could on it and found out that the program was feasible for me. And with my finances, being a taxpayer as well, just like everybody else here, I also took advantage of it. I figured that with her program, if it stays going, which I'm hoping it does, I could have my own apartment in anywhere from 30 to 45 days. Without this program, I might as well stay in jail then, because it's not going to do me a bit of good. The other thing I'd like to mention is that I understand, based on my own opinion here, that's a fast minute. Okay. All right then. There are two kinds of homeless. There's the homeless that are working, such as myself, who want to get themselves out of homelessness and set their step at life straight. And the homeless that don't really care about themselves. And that's all I've got to say. Thank you.
Mike? Hey, folks. I just came to Santa Cruz from the desert, where I was living on my SSI like a king. My rent was $150 a month, and that left me money to get around and get alternative medical treatment. I'm facing dialysis, and I have a lot of other medical problems. My first night in Santa Cruz, I spent in a church parking lot. About 3 o'clock in the morning, my legs cramped up, and I couldn't move. I barely made it to the hospital. They told me about River Street Shelter, so I tried that. And amongst a stuffy, snoring room full of men, I couldn't get down off the top bunk, and I was just getting more stressed out. And then they told me about this place where I could move into the woods with my dog and my truck and everything I own until I find a place to live. And I said, thank God. Thank you very much. Oh, one other thing. These two ladies and the park rangers, they've given me a lot of compassion, and it's made me feel very comfortable and a lot less stressed out. Thank you for not letting me be one of these people that has to run around and sleep in ditches at night.
Well, this is only my fifth day, but I think it's wonderful. And I hope the program continues, because I'd like to stay through May. And thank you.
My name's Dan. I'd like to speak on the homeless campground program. I have to talk pretty fast, it looks like. This plan for 60 homeless persons. I'm sorry. Yeah, 60 homeless persons to have a safe place to sleep is absolutely a step in the right direction.
However, I have heard that this program is now going to be squashed. If so, how can we do this in good conscience, as only 2 weeks was given to get the program off the ground? This is hardly enough time to get any social program established. I would suggest extending this time limit and give it a chance to get established, or allow homeless to go to a safe zone to sleep, where they are not made criminals for sleeping, and receive a $162 ticket and getting arrested and taken to jail. The homeless are suffering the prejudice and bigotry of persons who have to feel superior to others. The sleeping ban defies all logic, all common sense, and defies good, sound intelligence. This sleeping ban had to be put together by exceedingly cruel and inhuman persons who have no business suggesting and putting into practice such a cruel, inhumane, prejudicial, bigoted law which makes sleeping against the law. Thank you.
Aaron Small,
Celeste. Good afternoon. I'd just like to tell you about myself. My name is Aaron. I'm an electronics technician. I have a college degree. I'm in the Army National Guard and have been for 10 years. I'm not a drug addict, I'm not an alcoholic. Due to circumstances beyond my control, my wife and I are homeless. We were staying at Henry Cal State Park on our own, making and paying for the camp each day, and we were informed that even though I was standing with cash in my hand, unless I had a credit card, I would be unable to use the state park system. This time of year, you have to have reservations, you have to have a credit card. That's when we found out about this program, and it's made it possible for us to stay there for the last week. I don't know where we'll go, what we'll do without it. All we're asking for and all we need is a safe and legal place to put our tent until we can get back on our feet. Thanks.
Okay, this is back to the City Council for deliberation and action.
I first want to start out by thanking Barbara and Barbara Riverfield and Sherry Congol for coming forward with this idea and this program. I think the amount of hard work, their commitment, their compassion, and it really took true grit on their part.
Listening to Catherine Byers and the first council member to speak after the public input section, which was abruptly shrunk by Michael Rotkin and orchestrated. Again, this is all a preening of the council that's going on here, and a preening of Barbara and Sherry. They're all sort of, they're being given, you know, A for effort. They all did real well. They should feel good about themselves, and now they should go home and shut up. That seems to be the message here, because that's what the message is as you listen to this debate, to any discussion of alternatives that might immediately have some impact, which Celia Scott, for instance, later proposed. And what you see is everybody caving in, and not just the council, but you also see Barbara Riverwoman caving in. Barbara Riverwoman made a very interesting and articulate presentation, but she's not fighting for the program. She's succumbing to the political winds rather than fight them. Her pretext and the pretext of the council is there might be a legal challenge. Actually, such a legal challenge will be very effective in terms of publicizing the issue of the city's sleeping ban. But that would further embarrass city politicians. So instead, Barbara apparently prefers to have cozy relations with the city council and to hope that things will improve down the line and to work within the system and to do all those things that essentially maintain good relations with the council members.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz. We're calling in to get an update on what's happening with the Free Radio Berkeley trial.
Oh, well, I just came in, but they just gave an update, and I think the judge decided to wait on her decision. She heard both sides, and she hasn't made a final decision yet, so the radio's going to stay on the air until she does so.
I see. Do we have anyone in the studio who either was there, or do you have a tape of a kind of a more elaborate analysis of that on the demonstration in front of the Oakland courthouse?
I don't think the last DJ was able to record the report back from the hearing.
So you actually got an incoming phone call?
Yeah, it was a phone call from the courthouse.
Do we have any stats on how many people showed up at the court?
Apparently a lot did, but the cops who were there weren't letting anybody in. That is, even though the judge ordered them to let more people in. As I understand it, there's a lot of room in the courtroom for people to sit, but they weren't letting that many people in.
And the Judge Claudia Wilkin ordered the marshals to let people in, but the marshals refused.
Well, they sort of let people in very, very slowly, not nearly quick enough to get, you know, people in to listen to the arguments.
How long were the arguments?
I'm afraid I don't know that.
Uh-huh. Let me give you our number down here in case you're willing to give us a report, because we are live and we have a lot of people interested in what's going on in that courtroom. Not just in terms of the decision as it came down, or as it's going to come down, but in terms of, you know, the how it was argued and so forth, and the protest out front.
Alrighty.
Let me give you my number here.
Okay.
The number of Free Radio Santa Cruz is 408-427-3772.
Okay, I'll try and find the DJ who just left and see if he can call you back.
That would be great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we interrupted our tape of the city council meeting to bring you a live report from Berkeley on the situation for Free Radio Berkeley, and indeed for all free radios throughout the country. I suspect that they're going to be taking their cue from what happens in this district court today, in the court of Judge Claudia Wilkins, who previously had supported the rights of free radio stations, at least Free Radio Berkeley, in a very courageous act. She's in the past also supported the rights of the homeless in putting Proposition O, the sit on the sidewalk, go to jail law in Berkeley, on hold. So we'll be tuned, hoping they'll call us back, and certainly we should be learning pretty soon, I guess pretty soon, at least that was the indication of the person at the station, what's going on. We return now to City Council, April 9th, 1996, the afternoon session when the voucher program was being killed by the council and the very activists who had proposed it. Let us say, rather, that they were not trying to mobilize support on its behalf. Contrast their statements with the statements of the homeless people who were saying, what are we going to do without this program? You now hear the council discussing the program, and actually you're hearing some of my commentary on what the nature of that discussion was.
Recognize so-called political realities rather than reach for the ideals that really are vital here, basic ideals of affordable housing, affordable campground space for people, an end to the sleeping ban. True, she supports these things verbally, but you don't even see her fighting for her own program, the program that she kicked up so much dust and fur and spit around, program that essentially she allowed to separate homeless people in terms of homeless activists for, the program that she went behind the back of activists to set up with the city council. When the city council said no, then she backs away. See, it's what the three city council members who claim to be opposed to the sleeping ban, Celia Scott, Scott Kennedy, and Catherine Byers, do themselves, although Celia Scott is doing this less. They say, we can't even talk about this issue much publicly, we can't take any action because we don't have all the political power. We don't have the fourth vote to change the city's onerous sleeping ban. While Riverwoman is essentially saying she's not going to fight for this program, she's not going to fight for the funding. She's not going to go public and make the kind of outcry that she might actually get some support. Instead, it's accepting the politically possible because she doesn't want to antagonize her friends on the city council, and she doesn't want to appear unreasonable and perhaps too shrill. That kind of strategy never wins here in Santa Cruz unless you have the hearts and minds of the council to begin with, unfortunately. Well, she did get her campground, I guess, privately for 3 months, and she got some public funding for 2 weeks. Let's give her that. Now let's listen to some more of Catherine Byers wringing her hands and proposing no alternatives for the 500 to 1,500 homeless people who are now illegal in Santa Cruz at night.
Being involved in this last 2 weeks, I think Barbara mentioned that and finding out how strong people feel, the hatred they have about the homeless, it was so overwhelming to listen to that on a day-to-day, but keep on being positive about a program. I know it must have taken an awful lot out of them and on their part, as well as it did for many of us. I just want, for your information in the council, I think you probably pretty much know that
I made an attempt to answer all the phone calls along with Celia, who called us and asked for a return call, and we made probably somewhere in the realm of 50 phone calls to people. I thought it was really important to explain the program. There was so much misunderstanding and just wrong information out there. So there was an attempt. I don't think I can, and these are people who are close to it, I don't think I convinced anybody. But it was an opportunity to really talk about the situation of the homeless. I think the thing that kept coming over the phone, though, was what was I going to do about it? It wasn't ever what are we going to do about, but was I? What was the city of Santa Cruz going to do about the situation when they agreed that there probably were 120 people out on the street, but at one point the place was safe no longer. So it, whatever we do today, and I think we've heard the reason, you know, that going forward, this is really not, at least in my view right now, what we ought to do. But I'm totally committed to not giving up on this issue. We've got to find some type of year-round shelter for the homeless. And we have to spend a lot of time educating the people. I think the people that came and spoke to us, those of you who are here, and I hope a lot of people are watching on television, can see that so many of their misconceptions of the homeless are just wrong. They're mean. And only by our constantly being out there. I'm proud of this council to do what we did. I think we wanted to get some dialogue. We've gotten it. And I think, I won't make a motion. I don't think we're going to be on the floor, but a lot of other people want to speak to that. But I do want to thank you again, and I want to thank those who came forward and spoke to us. I'm sorry that there's so much, so many, many people throughout the state. The 66 phone calls were all area codes other than 408. So I know it is, you know, I know that tourism is a real issue. We can't ignore that. I think it would have gotten worse if we continued. But we also need to address the people who do come from outside, that they also need to understand the issue of the homeless. And we need to look at other solutions and other ways of educating them.
So Catherine wrings her hands and talks about the need for dialogue and a campground somewhere down the road, and but she can't support this program. But it's not clear why she can't support this program. And we know it's inadequate, it's a fig leaf. We know there are enough people have not really gotten into it, but it's the beginning of the month. People are doing other things. They either have money to go elsewhere, or else they don't even have the $10 to get into the program at the moment. And also the news the program hasn't spread. And then there's the question of warrant checks. You have to apparently put your name on a list to go into this state park program, unlike the Coral Street Open Air Shelter. So her response is completely inadequate, and I find it, in a way, kind of contemptible and self-serving, although I don't really think she intends to be self-serving. But she praises this and that, and that's her praise for the council members and for Barbara and Sherry is supposed to somehow make up for the fact that that night people will be sleeping illegally. No, she could make an immediate proposal, or actually she could have later supported a proposal by Celia Scott to act on the sleeping ban, or at least to start studying it, but she hasn't even done that. She kicks that one down the road. She again is the mistress of the politically possible, and she's been doing this for 6 years, actually for 8 years. She's been on the council since 1989, when she was appointed to Mo Reisch's seat, who resigned in disgrace back in at that time. Reisch was another case. His campaign for city council was run by Sherry Connable, of all people. He promised a moratorium on the sleeping ban laws, and when he got to office, he sneered at the demonstrators and just went right ahead doing what he wanted to do and paying no attention to the rights of homeless people and their need to sleep at night. Speaker is Celia Scott, who, as I said, was really the only council member who had anything significant to say on the subject, and who took...
Our tape ran out there, but we will be turning it over. You're listening to the Santa Cruz City Council and the After Report by me from last Tuesday, the council session that killed the campground, or I should say the bus them up to the state parks proposal that caused so much outcry among bigots throughout the state and the officialdom of state parkland. We'll now hear a little of Celia Scott.
Timid things to say as well, but her timidity at least looked to some kind of immediate focus on the sleeping ban.
In Santa Cruz, really, we're not born out. And in fact, it's important to keep in proportion, in fact, which is that something like 10 to 12% of the total visitor accommodations in Santa Cruz County are state park campgrounds. The remainder are in hotels and motels and other types of facilities. And of course, the state park campgrounds primarily generate revenue for the state of California, not for Santa Cruz County. Plus, the state park system has chosen to block this program, which is relatively inexpensive, to propose a very small number of campsites to use, maybe two in the state park.
Unfortunately, the reason you're hearing all the jerkiness in the discussion is because the voice-operated function on the tape recorder was on. My apologies here. You do get some interesting statements from Celia, but they are a bit jerky.
For those who want to hear the real jerks, and there are plenty of them on that city council, as I said before, all you have to do is go to the library, probably wait till Monday or Tuesday when the tapes are forwarded, and ask to hear the tapes of the city council afternoon session. I think it's item 18. You can also get a copy of the agenda from the library. Take a look at which section has the voucher homeless in the camps, and you can actually hear a much more audible version of this discussion. But you won't get my very succinct and pungent analysis. Think of that. So that you have to catch now.
A very small number of campsites to use, maybe two in the state park. And in fact, the state people relying on regulations that I believe are really subject to interpretation. And it's my belief that the regulations are not really the issue. The real issue has been the fear that the state park campground would be deserted by the public and there would be a loss of revenue to the state park system. And so far that hasn't actually happened, but it is a real fear, like all the other fears that we're having to deal with here. I do agree with the state park director that this program is not a long-term solution to homelessness, but I do believe that it was a useful short-term stopgap program, which is all it was ever intended to be. It was not intended to be anything else, and I still support the program, and I'm pleased that there are people who have come here today who have been helped by it, and I would like to see them helped in some way. I don't want them to feel abandoned. I think this program would have filled a bit of a gap, and it was really a problem that was created by the closing of the National Guard Armory in Dale Davis Park at the end of March.
Now here Celia strays into fantasy. She knew, and we all knew, that the armory was closing in March. In fact, she had a six-month lead on this. In fact, she sat on the subcommittee that was supposed to find an alternative to the Coral Street Open Air Shelter, which took care of 200 to 300 people, at least in its heaviest time in the fall. She knew this, and she also knew that her friends on the Citizens Committee for the Homeless were closing the only open-air shelter for homeless people in Santa Cruz, the only legal place for people to sleep at night, the only campground in the country. She knew all these things, and yet she constantly blocked any discussion of changing the situation. And I repeat this because it's very important. Celia Scott was a key player in letting the Citizens Committee do its dirty work to set up its little 20 to 40 person trailer park on property that was bought for the homeless by the city in 1987, and that was with homeless funding, and then was repurchased by a group calling itself the Citizens Committee for the Homeless in 1990 or 91. So this talk that somehow it was the National Armory or the National Guard, this is the weak point in Celia Scott's whole argument, that it certainly wasn't the fault of the National Guard or the state government or the Governor Wilson. Had to do with the lack of will at the local level and her unwillingness to confront her pals on the Citizens Committee for the Homeless. that, unfortunately, is something she has never yet, hasn't come to grips with yet, and hopefully she will come to grips with in the months ahead. She apparently cannot bear the thought that these people are a bunch of lying scoundrels who are excluding people from a public process. And herein lies some of the weakness of Celia Scott. In spite of all the positive things that happened at this meeting with respect to Celia Scott, which were numerous, nonetheless, she has this blind side. She is an attorney, the only attorney on the council, and she also seems to be completely oblivious, has a kind of an oblivious aspect to what is going on in the real world around homeless issues. For instance, when she wandered up to the vigil, the sleep out at City Hall vigil 30-odd days after it started, and talked to Dan Hopkins. Dan Hopkins was amazed to hear that she didn't have any idea that this was going on, or at least she said she didn't. For a woman who's so high profile on the homeless issue and allegedly has expressed so much interest in it, not to take an interest in these issues or not to know what's going on is astonishing. But in a way, it seems actually quite apropos, because she seemed to have the same naivete about her colleagues on the Citizens Committee for the Homeless Board of Directors, to believe that they would not say a word about the elimination of the only campground in Santa Cruz and proceed with that without any kind of discussion of the impact that would have on the homeless population is a difficult belief for her to swallow. But in fact, it was quite obvious and it was quite clear that's what was happening to anyone who was in those meetings throughout October, November, and December. Citizens Committee for the Homeless Board of Directors. Briefly itemized what Celia Scott did do, the positive things, and they were many. There were at least five positive things she did at this council meeting. Several minutes before the entire voucher debate came up, first item on the agenda nearly was the question of claims against the city by individuals who've been abused by the police. And there was one woman, I believe her name was Williams, who was fearfully abused, or at least claimed to be, when Officer, not Sergeant, but Officer Seeley raided the death chamber where her husband was lying sick, covered with a blanket, with a catheter and a diaper on, shouted and screamed, "Where's the cocaine?" said, demanded, "You sit right here," all this without a search warrant, and then stripped the body of the blanket, started taking photographs, flipped his card down on the table and walked out. And there was a claim for mental suffering. These claims are usually denied out of hand by the city. I read the entire claim in its entirety, and Celia Scott, to her credit, immediately requested that claim be returned to closed session of the council for essentially more consideration. That was seconded by Byers and unanimously passed by the city council. So I've never seen my presentation of something result in so quick a consequence, and that was good. Her second positive action was the mentioning of the camping ban, and you'll hear her talking about this, the sleeping ban. And not only did she talk about it once, she talked about it repeatedly during this debate. She was ignored and overruled by Rotkin and not supported by Byers, and she kept looking for support and not getting it. I think what she has to learn is not to worry about support, but to be content to be the individual voice which tries to lead and show the way, the trailblazer, the pathfinder here. But she did speak about it repeatedly, as she did she kept a commitment that she had made to those on the Open Air Shelter Subcommittee, that if there was no Open Air Shelter in March, she would move on this issue. She's a bit late, it's April, but she's trying to move on the issue, which has to be respected. Then during the break between the two council sessions, which was the 3:30 and the 7 o'clock session on that Tuesday, I approached her with some information, namely that Gary Yamane of the Citizens Police Review Board, a staff member, had attempted to set up a meeting with Chief Belcher about the theft by police of blankets at the City Hall sleepout. They've been taking blankets every time they give tickets, allegedly for the purpose of, quote, evidence, when in fact all they need to do is take pictures, and they've also been taking pictures. It's clearly an attempt to punish the demonstrators and make it more difficult for them to continue. Calling blankets instrumentalities of crimes is a way of encouraging sickness and hypothermia, and it's a violation of the First Amendment as well as being cruel and unusual punishment, which seems pretty clear to anybody looking at the situation. So Yamani agreed to go in and talk to Belcher about this because he felt that the complaint process wouldn't be very effective, though we have filed complaints about this with the Citizens Police Review Board. He went to the city manager, actually the assistant city manager, and when he did, Mayor Mike Rotkin reportedly came in and interrupted the proceedings by saying, well, this isn't Chief Belcher's idea, this is me and the City Council. I'm acting on the directives of the City Council. City Council wants these laws enforced. And actually, the matter had turned at that point not to blankets, which was the original purpose that Gary Yamane went in to see the assistant city manager to prevail upon her to go to the police chief. That's the procedure in Santa Cruz. Supposedly, the City Council does not give direction, nor does the Citizens Police Review Board give direction to the police department. Instead, you go to the city manager, who then gives direction to the police department. It's kind of a two-tier process. Well, Rotkin stated that the business of destroying signs, which was an earlier controversy involving Lieutenant Habey, who had been taking signs from the sleep-out vigil in front of City Hall, the peaceful vigil now in its 43rd day, which is trying to alert the city and the city council to the crying need for some kind of modification of the sleeping ban, so that we, like those, like in San Francisco, there is a policy that at least there be no arrests for sleeping, or at least a stated policy. We have yet to see that San Francisco is fulfilling its promise, but at least it's made the promise. Anyway, the discussion had to do with, Rotkin immediately intervened on the question of signs and said that signs would be destroyed if they were not held up by demonstrators in their hands. They could not be leaned against city property, that was the, quote, sign ordinance. And that, moreover, all this stuff was coming from him, not from Police Chief Belcher, that we were not to attack Police Chief Belcher, that it was him following the directives of the city council, according to Gary Yamane's interpretation. So the point is that this is preposterous. He can't act on behalf of the city council. He's gotten no directives from the city council. Rotkin has done this before. In December, he closed the campground, or declared he would send in the police and so forth, because supposedly the campground hadn't had a permit, and then they couldn't continue over the winter and so forth, and that this is what the city council's decision was. Well, the city council made no decision. The campground had had no permit for a year. For Rotkin to come in and state that suddenly he would act to make sure the campground closed and it would not allow it to reopen, even if the CCH, for some strange reason, wanted to keep its commitment and keep it open through the winter, is preposterous. It's a bizarre and inappropriate assertion of his own personal authority in which he's claiming to act for the city council. But that's what he and Scott Kennedy did. And to their discredit, Catherine Byers, actually to her discredit, Catherine Byers, who was also there, said nothing about this and didn't dispute it. Again, the mouse-like posture that she has generated over the years. She's just not that kind of person, apparently, or else she doesn't believe in operating that kind of way. But we're talking about Celia Scott's accomplishments, and her accomplishments were when she was told that Michael Rotkin, the mayor, had specifically stated that, you know, that he was, the Belcher was not to be blamed, that it was the city council and the mayor that was acting to destroy signs and enforce these arbitrary regulations designed to make the demonstration less effective and less visible. She said, well, he can't speak for the city council. We are all, you know, he's just one member of the city council. And I said, yes, but when he speaks as mayor, everyone listens to him and his voice rules. And she said, well, you have to get the information to us so that we can speak out. And I said, that's what I'm doing, Celia. And she said, and looking at me, she nodded and acknowledging that and said, good, then we'll take it from here, in essence. She didn't use quite those words, but she indicated again that information going to her would not be wasted and ignored, that it would be acted upon. And she has been showing this repeatedly in the last few months, not to the extent that I feel it suits me or meets the needs of the people who are giving her the information, no, but at least she's acting on it to the extent of bringing it up at city council meetings. The fourth thing Celia Scott did, and we aren't going to be able to get to all these today in terms of the tapes, and for those of you who want to hear them, I encourage you to go to the library. The fourth thing Celia Scott did was she, after speeches from Robert Flory and Daniel Hopkins at the Oral Communications Public Comment period at 7 o'clock part of the city council, she, hearing that blankets were being stolen by police, seized as evidence, if you will, she and Catherine Byers, at her initiative, she directed the staff to prepare an FYI, that is to say, a report, a four-year information report on this issue. And the fifth thing she did, aside from voting against the drum out the drummer's law that Mike Rodkin was so proud of and was pushing, was, and this was to me a little thing but an important thing, she used my arguments against this initiative, against this, this onerous attack on Afro-Americans and poor drummers, she used my argument, which was essentially, why not use existing laws to deal with the situation? I guess I had a number of arguments at that point. And
I echoed the argument of another speaker that there be a quiet zone as a possibility around certain residential areas, that there be mediation, that you don't need a regulation for everything. Indeed, regulations were specifically dismissed by Mayor Rodkin in the case of kayaks and the kayak surfer controversy, which preceded this whole thing. Should the kayak people have 3 hours and the surfers have 3 hours? He urged the city council not to get involved with this, and urged that the surfers and kayaks didn't really want people, the council, to get involved with this. But of course, in the case of drum out the drummers or harass the homeless on sitting on the sidewalk, Rodkin was right there pushing new and vicious anti-homeless legislation. The sitting law, of course, was 2 years ago. The drummer's law was 3 days ago. Sorry about that pause, folks. I'm not sure exactly why that was, but we're going to try to correct it. I'm turning up the PGM master. Maybe that was the problem. We'll go back a little bit here so we can conclude the council session. Actually, we're going to try to reach the Citizens Police Review Board before they go home. We had Gary Yamane of the Citizens Police Review Board, a very interesting session on Monday. They have a monthly session. We've been following it at the different shows. We've been following the course of this board, which has had lots of problems and recently lost one of its most powerful members, John Malkin. Let's talk to Gary Yamane about that, if we can reach him on the phone. Let's see if we can. Of course, I sometimes dial the wrong number here, but hopefully we're going to be doing this properly.
Hello, you've reached the City of Santa Cruz Citizens Police Review Board.
Oh boy.
At 429-3262. Our office hours
looks like
are
they've
9
gone home early, folks.
Monday through Thursday. Please leave a message at the tone and we'll call you back as soon as possible. Thank you.
Hey there, this is Free Radio Santa Cruz, and it's not 1 o'clock yet, all you hardworking officials at the Citizens Police Review Board. If you get in the next 8 minutes, we'd like a call at 427-3772. If not, well, we're just going to have to steal it from you on Monday. Thanks.
Well, there you have it. They get away without talking to us, and it's shocking but true. Well, let's continue the old story. The City Council tape, then we'll have an interview with Keith McHenry, which we were going to play on Monday but had no time to do, and after that we'll soft shoe in a few songs. Plus, of course, your phone calls. 427-3772 is our phone number. We're still waiting for an update from Free Radio Berkeley on what's going on there in Oakland Federal District Court, and we'll be relaying that to you as soon as we get some information.
This onerous attack on Afro-Americans and poor drummers. she used my argument, which was essentially why not use existing laws to deal with the situation. I guess I had a number of arguments at that point.
And I was discussing those arguments when the mic went dead. Those arguments particularly included... what did those arguments include? Let me see. They included the fact that mediation, rather than other forms of regulation, would be appropriate, that kayaks and surfers were not being regulated, so why go after this particular group of people using percussion instruments? It seems to be rather abusive. And Celia Scott echoed that.
She cited me by name, and I guess maybe I get real happy when people are unafraid to cite me by name, because even demonstrators like to make jokes that I'm some sort of a wild-eyed radical whose proposals are crazy and beyond the pale and disrupts public meetings and so forth. And actually, that's not what I do at all. I simply try to bring common sense and moral authority to issues that people are ignoring and that are particularly near and dear to my heart. Basically, civil liberties for poor people. I think they're really vital issues. And when I make sensible arguments, I don't like being... of course, I expect Michael Rotkin and Scott Kennedy to sneer at and dismiss me. There's no problem there, because that's what they do. But it annoys me when fellow activists sort of laugh and jostle themselves and sort of talk about, the most irritating man in Santa Cruz. I mean, I go along with that. I've worn that mantle proudly from the Metro. But it's really an attempt to smear me, and it's an attempt to smear, more important, the arguments and the issues that I'm supporting. And that is really significant, because if we ever got together a more weighty homeless movement, the arguments that I advance would be discredited by these kinds of attacks on my character, or my credibility, or my manner of comporting myself at meetings. And though I'm occasionally dramatic, and I wear a bathrobe, and I do call out council members, and I've risked arrest at times, all of this has been as part of a graduated process when I've been ignored in terms of ordinary, diplomatic, low-key discussion. And when you cannot allow issues to be buried, you have to continue to bring them up. Anyway, Celia Scott's use of my name, say, as Mr. Norris has said, Mr. Norris's arguments, shows me that she's willing to at least take the arguments and attach my name to them, the arguments that were given, without fear that somehow that would discredit the arguments. And to me, that shows courage on her part, real courage. So, we continue to hear Celia Scott talking at the April 9th City Council session in Santa Cruz on the burial services for the campground, the camping proposal up in the parks, state parks.
Not going to go away. In fact, we know that homeless people will, in fact, be camping in the outlying areas of state parks, as they probably already are, local parks, or any other open space, such as along the Santa Rosa River, because there are no other alternatives for many people. And that camping is going to occur outside designated campsites without the benefit of sanitary facilities. The fact is that we don't have any developed campsites in the city of Santa Cruz, and I think one reason I supported it was that it seemed to me to make more sense to have people camping somewhere where they could have access to sanitary facilities. So the real question is, what are we going to do with this modest program? And it was really a very modest program. It's not continued. The city presently receives no financial assistance from the state of California to meet homeless shelter needs, and in fact plans to take away the armory as a winter shelter after next winter. Federal assistance is also declining. I believe our community needs to focus on more positive approaches to meeting the challenge of homelessness. We're not going to get the assistance that we need from the higher levels of government in the current political positions that exist in Sacramento and Washington. I think we're just going to have to figure out some way to do it ourselves. I would like to state, as Barbara Riverwoman requested personally, that I support the concept of a well-managed small-scale program for homeless people in our state parks. And I do not want to vote against it, but if it does not go forward,
I believe it really is because we don't want to confront the state park system and legal battles. I would propose instead that we consider a number of possibilities. One is that we create a, with council participation, some type of task force, a homeless task force that would review the total available homeless services in our community. I think we all know that shelter is only one component of meeting the needs of homeless people. It's an essential one, but there are also health issues, there are drug rehabilitation issues, there are issues in providing job retraining and job assistance to people. And I would like to look into some specific program service components and improvements that we might be able to consider. One thing that I would suggest we might look into is the cost of retrofitting the vacant bay, the Coral Street facility for shelter purposes. I don't know what that would cost. I don't think it would meet all the needs, but it is something that is currently in public use for something more suitable. I would also, and I consider that kind of a long-term, those long-term, the idea of a homeless task force really a long-term approach. It's not going to produce any immediate changes, and it's not going to produce any immediate assistance for homeless people. Personally, I would like to review the camping ban ordinance for some possible modifications, something that might expand the possibility of vehicle camping areas, might expand the existing church parking program. We might look into the possibility of a warning system, and even the possibility of a moratorium on ticketing. I don't, my conscience personally, to see people ticketed when they have no place to sleep, and we have no place to refer them to. If we had a place to refer people to, and we can't sleep here, but you can go over there, that would be fine, but we don't even have that. And I would like to find some way to assist the 12 people who are currently in the housing options program so that they're not just out in the cold on April 15th. And this program probably will end. That's not a motion either, but it's my thoughts on the subject.
Call myself.
And unfortunately, the tape is getting so inaudible here that it's not profitable to continue it. Again, you can hear this tape at the library. Just go in and ask at the reference desk. And it's worth following this discussion as you get to see how every other council member slides out of these proposals by Celia Scott completely. She's dismissed even by the great liberal Catherine Byers. We have an incoming call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Yeah, at least she does open up the issue.
Oh, yeah. Could you actually hear her on the air, by the way?
If you turn it up, you can, sure.
Good. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, well, I think I hear the voice of the man that I insist on calling Battling Bob LaMonica.
Well, you can call me what you want, but...
I'm not going to call you late for supper. In fact, I haven't invited you out lately, but what's up, Bob?
Well, I thought maybe it might be nice to define some terms. You know, we hear this term class being bandied about, and it's used in context. There's class action suit, there's class struggle, class clown, and then there's, of course, no class.
Mm-hmm.
The only one that I'm sure about is class struggle. Class struggle means, of course, that you do all the struggle and I get all the class. And class action suit could be taken more than one way. You know, there could be a class action suit, like a suit that you wear that you feel classy about, that you're going to go out and try to get some action going. And then, of course, there's the legal class action suit.
Mm-hmm.
So, class... And in the sense of the homeless people and those that wish to live a different lifestyle, I think a lot of this stuff with the issue of the sleeping ban and the like, it ties into a broader issue of how we look at life, values, how tolerant we are. And specifically in Santa Cruz, I think the reality is that by the degrees that policies regarding transient types of lifestyles and alternate lifestyles get relaxed, that Santa Cruz will open up and become the Canterbury that it should be. And I think to a large degree that's some of the fear. But there are many things that can be done short of the legal open-air shelter, which should be the goal. But, for example, Redwood City, I understand, has what they do is they allow the upper two levels of at least one parking garage to be used by transients.
Really?
And they set up porta-potties. And, yeah, I mean, things can be done. Right, it's a question of taking initiative and leadership and being willing to set precedent. Everybody is so precedent paranoid,
mm-hmm.
Right? Nobody wants to set precedent, and you see so much of what happens in the courts being determined by code book jockeying so that nobody sets a precedent.
Mm-hmm.
It's those are the issues that I wanted to pop out, but
those are the issues.
It's good to listen to the tape, and Celia Scott and others, I think Catherine Byers also to a degree, need to be lauded and applauded and praised for their effort and context, because the exact opposite is also being presented by those that refuse to any degree at all to show some respect and revere and give some praise to the very admirable and honorable demonstration in front of City Hall, which is a very important catalyst, a political catalyst. It has a purpose in and of itself, but it is also becoming and has become a very, very profound catalyst for some new political energy.
Well, I don't want to give Celia too much credit. She hasn't mentioned the demonstration in front of City Hall at all, so maybe you should get on her tail and give her a call and tell her to get off her butt and give some credit to those demonstrators and maybe use her her legal talents to support them in their right, for example, to have signs without having Belcher and Rotkin rush in and destroy them, you know.
Well, absolutely. And this the demonstration is producing examples that we're all learning from and growing from, and ultimately producing confrontation. There's going to be intense confrontation. This year can be a very intense, and is becoming really just by default, a very intense political year. And we're seeing people for who they are. Life gives you tests, right? Things come down the pike. Mm-hmm. Just like with the Danner thing. I finally got a copy of the Board of Supervisors resolution from April 4th, 1995, resolution number 114-95, where they exonerate the DA from falsifying time cards overlapping his election. Mm-hmm. Now, the stunning thing in the whole paper trail, this is item 50 on the agenda, April 4th, 1995, the word election is never mentioned in all this exoneration and cover-up, basically, and the key document is this resolution, 114-95. The fact of the matter is that those time cards were falsified, overlapping his election. It is hush money. It is a theft of public funds, et cetera, plain and simple. They never use the word election. They never put it in chronological context. So this, like many other things that we're seeing, are exposing us to the truth of abuse of power, manipulation of the judicial process. We do not have the ability to be open and honest and things lie ahead.
Well, I would take this opportunity again to encourage you and others to give a call to Celia Scott at 429-3550 at the council number. I believe she also has a private number. It's under Celia Scott, probably Vandermeule. I mean, she may have changed it back to Celia Scott or Celia Vandermeule Scott. And tell her that you support her being more accessible as she seems to be and raising the issue of the sleeping ban. You hope that she's able to divorce herself from the Citizens Committee for the Homeless's bad policies and worse cover-up of those bad policies and even worse censorship of the cover-up of the bad policies. And the more input she gets on what's going on, the more she seems to be willing to pass on the input. She's very academic in her approach in that she tends to repeat criticisms that she hears from me and from others, but she doesn't have a lot of doesn't take a lot of independent initiative to find out what's going on herself in terms of, let's say, the harassment of the homeless, in terms of sleeping tickets, and in terms of violations of protest rights, in terms of seizure of backpacks, in terms of harassment at the Ford's parking lot. But I think if people call her with reports on this, she may become more active. So I encourage you to do that, Bob.
In fact, to a certain degree, I have.
Good, because
okay,
I know you're...
Back. One last thing, if I might say this.
Sure.
There is an issue, a line that can be seen with people that are in positions of authority, bureaucratic positions of authority, where they have the power to proclaim. And when somebody will at least informally agree that something should be, but they will not come forth, all right, because coming forth requires courage, and to a certain degree, you have to constantly redefine where your loyalties are. If you're loyal to a group of individuals simply because you've been loyal to them for a couple of decades, that is no basis for denying the truth when it comes down the pike and you have to deal with it.
True enough, and I'm going to run on you.
All right, take care.
Thanks, Bob.
And that was Bob LaMonica giving us, as usual, strong motivation, his strong analysis of political power here in Santa Cruz, both at the county level and the city level.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hi, I just wanted to call and give you guys a legal update on Free Radio Berkeley's court today.
You're calling from Berkeley?
Yep.
What's your name?
I'm the Night Owl.
Hey, Mr. Night Owl, hoot on for us. We do give a hoot.
All righty. Well, we tried to enter the courtroom about 10 o'clock this morning, and we were met with Oakland PD marshals. They were saying there wasn't enough seats, which is a bunch of bull, because we know there's at least 50 seats in that courtroom.
Mm-hmm.
And so they slowed our progress into the courtroom, so we filtered in little by little. We had to pass through the metal detector. Any property we had, they wanted us to fill out a coat check slip with our name and address on the coat check slip form. I thought that was rather amusing.
How many of you were there?
There was about 30 people total in the courtroom.
How many?
There was about 30 people from the micro-powered movement, maybe.
Uh-huh. And how many empty seats were there?
It was pretty full, so I'd say there was about 40 of us. Then there was about 40 people and then 10 lawyers, so there was only maybe one or two seats empty.
And how many people did not get in the courtroom who were outside?
Quite a few. There was probably at least 50 people outside who, for legal reasons and other reasons, they probably didn't want to be seen in court or couldn't enter the courtroom, just decided to not even wait in line.
Now, were there many people from out of the area?
Yes, Free Radio San Jose was there, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a couple guys from Free Radio Santa Cruz were there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Free Arcadia Radio was there. But it was mostly, sadly enough, mostly Free Radio people.
Really?
Yeah.
How about other media people? Did the other media cover this?
There wasn't as much noise as we were making downtown. I mean, we had drumming and banners and Food Not Bombs was there. And there was probably at least 150 of us out in front of the courthouse,
mm-hmm.
About 100, at least 120, 130, and as much as there was, Channel 7 wasn't there, nobody. I mean, I think our efforts were concentrated on our media rather than the other media. I think we forgot to call Channel 7 or,
How about the press?
Yeah, the press wasn't really there. There was maybe one person from the press, maybe from the Open Trail, maybe one person from the Chronicle, but there was also three lawyers there that write for lawyers' journals.
Are we live on Free Radio Berkeley as well as Free Radio Santa Cruz or not?
No. Actually, you can call them right now. They're playing music, so they can give you further update. Their line was just busy.
You were there throughout the entire proceeding?
Correct. I was in the courtroom from beginning to end.
Did anyone record the entire proceeding?
It's only recorded by the courts, I think, because it's a federal court, mm-hmm. So we weren't allowed any taping devices they wouldn't even let me bring my Walkman in.
Well, give us a description, blow by blow, of what arguments you remember being made, and anything else that seems of interest.
Am I on live on the air right now?
You are.
Okay. Well, it started off where David Silverman stood up, and I'm a fond believer of body language. And
who is David Stellerman?
And he is the FCC's lawyer.
I see.
Arguing their case for them. He is like the official in-house FCC lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
And so he stood up, and he was twitching. I mean, his right shoulder, his neck, and he was arguing his case that we never came to him, we never approached him for a license with a clause in it saying that we could broadcast at low power, that case was never presented to him.
So they claim you never presented an application.
Correct.
And is that true?
And that is true, but there has been numerous cases where people have tried to get a license to broadcast at a low power, and every case has been overturned by them.
They've refused a license in all cases.
In all cases, and they said it takes an administrative hearing to get a low power station.
Mm-hmm.
So they said the administrative hearing costs hundreds of thousands of dollars to review a low watt station.
So, is that in fact the case? Has there ever been an administrative hearing for a low watt station?
Yes, the case of I believe it was Dugan 2 years ago.
what happened in that case?
The lower court, the federal court, told him he had to go to the Supreme Court, the appeals court. So they took it to the appeals court, and the appeals court said, no, this is, case isn't significant enough. We're too high of a court. You have to take it back to the lower federal court.
And meanwhile, they exhausted all the money they had to run the radio station.
Pretty much. I'm not sure what happened to Dugan, but basically they just gave him the runaround. And Judge Claudia Wilkin, she, whenever David Silverman spoke, she like, you could see the look on her face, like, it was kind of going in one ear and out the other, like, and she did not smile. Then when our side spoke, Luke Hyken, she was more attentive, she actually smiled, and, you know, she seems to like us. So,
what were Luke Hyken, is that his name?
Hyken, yes.
What were his arguments?
Well, we stated that Dugan, you know, got ran through the ringer, and basically that's what the FCC is trying to do to us now, and they brought up, you know, us stepping on other people's frequencies, and we brought up that, you know, that the content of the program is akin to being at 100 watts, because the corporations can afford 100 watts, which costs major dollars.
How much does 100 watts cost?
Millions. It's the regulations are such to where you have to have 3 full-time staff members on the board, you know, 3 full-time paid people. You know, like KLX is all volunteer, but there's 3 paid people, and they're subject to programming. So we brought up the issue that corporations can put out news and stories they want, the content they want, because they can afford to, because they'll talk about issues that are important to them. We brought up the fact that poor people basically run micro-powered radio, and they put out issues that are pertinent to them.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically, we started off really good, and then, you know, we kind of fizzled, and then we picked up speed towards the end.
In what way did you fizzle, Night Owl?
Not, I shouldn't use the word fizzle. I should watch my use of the English language. Well, basically what I mean by that is, she was like, here I am, I'm ready to help you guys. Tell me what legal basis you have for your arguments.
And for a time, Luke failed to present those legal arguments?
They were arguing ideology. She was saying, I know it's what you think, and this is what you've observed, and this is, she's all, but I need some basis on law, so I know what jurisdiction my court has, and I know what I can do.
And did he eventually come up with those arguments?
Well, that's when he presented the fact that corporations can put content what they want and what they filter, and low-powered poor people can put on what they want and what's important to them. And then, ultimately, it kind of ended up in the air that she would write her decision it could be 2 weeks, it could be 2 months,
mm-hmm.
on whether to issue an injunction. So she's going to review all these cases and then write her decision whether she's going to review it or she's going to move it up to the Supreme Court.
Now,
basically, right now, the whole thing is kind of in limbo.
Now, did the FCC's attorney, what's his name?
David Silverman.
Did Silverman make any telling arguments, in your opinion?
No, he just basically, talk about blabber and smoke. I mean, at one point I thought the judge was going to yawn when he was speaking. You know, he was just saying the same thing he's been saying all along, you know, and just, just in a kind of a change a few words, change a few sentences here and there, but basically he's been saying the same thing all along, that our signal's causing interference, it has no social redeeming value, you know.
Was there any evidence presented by Free Radio Berkeley that interference problems did not exist or had been corrected and that there was socially redeeming value?
Yeah. We didn't get into any technical aspects of it, but that's been clearly stated. If you've been to Berkeley and you've listened to our signal, there's no drift. If you're on 104.1 and you go to one direction, either way, you're going to lose us drastically. You know, so there's no drift. But, yeah, we did raise the social issue, but, you know, ultimately, it's the people's radio. It's the voice of the voiceless. And, you know, we should be allowed to do this. I mean, even though, you know, we weren't very equipped to handle, you know, the question she asked us is, give me a legal basis. I mean, I'm sure
I'm surprised.
Go back and dig that up.
So you weren't equipped to ask for a legal basis? That's time to fire the attorney, I guess, huh?
No. All our legal counsel is for free. It's the Lawyers Guild, the National Lawyers Guild. So we're being represented basically for free. I mean, they're on our side, and they're very much interested. I mean, the National Lawyers Guild conference opens up tomorrow, and one of their main topics is discussing defending micro-powered radio. So we basically, our legal basis, what we came up with was the Dugan case, where he got the runaround from the Supreme Court and the lower federal court, and basically, that's what our case was. We're trying to say that the FCC is doing that to us.
How long?
Where they laughed at him literally when he demanded to be taken to a magistrate. I'm laughing. I don't mean to laugh. I mean to. It's unbelievable.
Oh, you have to laugh or you will cry or get an ulcer, take your pick.
Yeah, and I explained the situation to him, and there was silence at the other end, and he said, really? And I said, really? He was totally shocked at what's going on. I would like actually to talk about something else for a minute.
Sure.
If I could, because a program aired last night on 48 Hours that was absolutely despicable. 48 Hours... purports to report the news. They were making news last night. This was a segment on the San Francisco Cannabis Buyers Club,
mm-hmm.
Which portrayed the club as basically a little social group that get together and smoke pot, and portrayed Dennis Perrone as being nothing more than a con man and a drug dealer.
And we're talking about the group that provides cannabis, marijuana for those who are suffering from long-term illnesses.
AIDS, cancer, those fighting the wasting syndrome from AIDS, glaucoma, multiple sclerosis. I just got a call from a woman in Hayward, as a matter of fact.